Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Dynamite preview. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamflett, Michael Sidgwick. Here's a look ahead to tonight's episode of AEW Dynamite Fight for the Fallen. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also Raw, SmackDown, NXT pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestling culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflett and Sidgwick to preview AEW Dynamite tonight. And what a wild, stacked card we have got tonight, Sidge.
Yeah, this is my most anticipated pro wrestling card of the year, I think. Mm-hmm. Even as a completely cynical WWE critic, paid critic, I was buzzing for WrestleMania Night 1. I just was. I saw the goddamn ship, pirate ship, cannon pyro, and thought, I'm having some of that, I'll wear. I'll become a 12-year-old who can watch this, and I'll do it again for one night. Double or Nothing, obviously massive hype. Like a few Dynamites on that level, but this is the most anticipated show personally of the year for me. It's all on the strength primarily of that goddamn 10 man. And it says something about the company that, and the state it's in, that I'm looking forward to this 10 man as much as I am the debuts of CM Punk and Daniel Bryan. But being, this is pure mark behavior, I don't care. Being heavily emotionally invested in something has its good and its bad. The extremes of something being great and knowing that more greatness is yet to come. Fantastic. This is why you watch pro wrestling. But this card is simply too stacked. It is simply too stacked. And as much as I love Tony Khan as a booker, and I read a tweet the other day, and I wish I'd tweeted it. It was so good. Tony Khan is the best thing that happened to professional wrestling since the invention of anabolic steroids. Yes, absolutely. That's correct. But if I was to criticize the great man for two things, those two things would be, one, he's a bit too nice for his own good. And there's a match on here, I suspect, has been slotted on this card to be nice. And that is nice. I'd rather that than WWE, but I'm feeling it might be to the detriment of the show. And two, he's an incredibly energetic guy. Look at how many businesses he runs. Look at how much work he does. Look at some of the worst Dynamites of the year in terms of how they're rushed and little is allowed to like register. And I feel like those two flaws might come together to the detriment of this card.
There is a corner of Twitter mostly full of Fulham badge avatars that would suggest he runs too many businesses, perhaps. And that certainly is reflected in this lineup. I share Sidgwick's enthusiasm for this and anticipation for this card completely, much the same. Feels enormous and not the first time, but that also does come, I don't want to say it's a cautionary tale, because there's been countless amazing Dynamites. But this match in particular, this Hangman Page and the Dark Order versus the Elite match, is another case where I just hope that I don't think that match will fail, and we're going to talk about that in more detail. I think that match is going to be incredible. But I hope that the other stuff that they've wrapped around it doesn't result in it being reduced in stature, or doesn't result in some of the other awesome things on this card taking a knock as a result of that match not failing. And I use some precedent for that now. Blood and Guts, I had similar anticipation for, and there were ultimately significant problems coming out the back of that. The Exploding Barbed Wire Deathmatch botch, and in my opinion, elements of the match, actually, but certainly the botch. This needs to be one where they absolutely nail. The 10-man tag is something they need to absolutely nail, and I hope that all the things on this show aren't the things that get in its way. Nothing of those in terms of those production botches, or just in terms of like some of the choices that were made for those matches, they're not going to affect that match. But elsewhere on this card, the stacked show, the timing out of other matches, they could have an impact, and that's ultimately out of that match's hand. And I hope that doesn't happen. These big shows have sometimes come with a little bit of disappointment the next day, and it'd be lovely to have celebrations without qualifiers and caveats tomorrow morning.
Mm. I watched the Road 2 before we jumped on here, and the fact that it doesn't even have time to mention the Dark Order versus the Dark Order Hangman Page versus the Elite tells you all you need to know about the fact that we've got an insane amount of matches on this show. We've got championship celebrations, announcements by Tony Khan. We've got titles on the line, Santana and Ortiz versus FTR. And it feels weird not to start with the match where someone might be murdered, but we've been attempting to preview this for a long time, Sige. So let's start with that 5-on-5 match. It is Hangman Page in the Dark Order, that being Hangman Page, Evil Uno, Stu Grayson, John Silver, and Alex Reynolds versus the Elite, Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, Gallows, and Anderson. We were going to attempt to try and book this in its entirety. We haven't had a chance to do it because it's been an eventful few weeks for AEW fans with the CM Punk and Daniel Bryan rumours. But nevertheless, Sige, give us the cliff notes of what you hope goes down with this match.
I just hope it gets 20 to 25 minutes. And I don't necessarily think a long match is automatically great. Christ knows that take and that sort of prevailing opinion has been pounded. Its dick has been pounded into the dirt by New Japan Pro Wrestling over the last 2 years, and certain matches on Raw, certain matches, let's face it, in AEW's history. But 20 to 25 minutes, which I don't actually think at this point it can like logistically get on this show, which is a concern of mine heading into it. But there's just so much to explore, so much brilliance to explore, so many awesome combinations of pro wrestlers with honed magical chemistry. That's not even like the lead of the match. It's to build to the grand showdown of the match. Evil Uno and Stu Grayson are perfect opponents for the Young Bucks. They've done outrageously awesome stuff in PWG. They did a match that's available to watch on YouTube if you want a little prime of what they can do ahead of tonight. And for Smash Wrestling in Canada, it's incredible. It's quintessential, proper heel Young Bucks. And there's this old sort of pro wrestling psychology that they say, oh, you know, you got to know when to bring the crowd up and bring the crowd down. And you got to patronize them a little bit just to make sure they get every story. But you don't want to like exhaust their tired little brains. The difference of the Young Bucks and the Super Smash Brothers, who are now, of course, the primary tag team in the Dark Order, is that they just went up, 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 up. And just when you thought it couldn't go more up, it went more up than the up you might have thought it could get. Amazing stuff. They're going to do stuff like that in this match, and it's nowhere near the actual attraction. The way to do it is to build towards Hangman Page and Kenny Omega. And the way to build that heat, not that they're going to need it, this should be on fire from the get-go. There's just so much to explore. The Revolution callbacks, Hangman Page clinging to a Young Buck's leg to deprive him from doing like the Meltzer driver or the Undertaker. Like Matt Jackson with Evil Uno on the ground, missing punches by about a foot and a half to call back to December 18. But this time it's different. The Dark Order are completely different. And Evil Uno can fire back up and start twatting them back in response. I want to see just when you think, right, okay, it's Kenny and Hangman. Kenny goes for the V-trigger. Hangman goes for the buckshot. And they collide into each other. And that's when you get the This Is Awesome chant and parity's been established. There are 1 million things you can explore in this pro wrestling match. John Silver eliminating Doc Gallows with a powerbomb, like for a big pop. Like, there are so many things in this match that they can do that legitimately, when I thought five matches were announced last week, one of which obviously wasn't going to go the distance in Archer versus Hikuleo, I just thought that's too much. That's too many matches. And they've added a sixth. And there's like two in-ring angles as well. In addition to all the pre-tapes that you're going to get that add up, they're going to have to do something to sell Cody versus Malakai Black next week. That makes sense. You're building towards a big match on another big show. All of these little pre-tapes that they do, sometimes they feel so unnecessary. That's like you've been reminded that people are feuding for next to no reason. Some things can wait a week, but they never do on this
Miro's
show.
Miro's got a title match next week.
Yeah, I mean, all of these pre-tapes, six matches, two of which are going to go pretty damn long with FTR versus Santana and Ortiz as well. Two angles, like the ideal scenario. They've done this twice, and I feel like they should do it tonight. In case anything goes wrong or over, don't make it to the detriment of this match. I want to see all 10 men in the ring to start the show. I want it to go through one ad break a la Pac and Phoenix versus the Bucks and Pac versus Omega. I want it to go 20 to 25 minutes. And as much as it'll kind of suck, if in fact that happens, to not see him do this in his entrance, but God damn it, as teased on Being the Elite, I want Hangman Page to wear purple. The ultimate babyface move for the ultimate babyface.
Hangman Page wears purple trunks. I'm going to be wearing white ones when I'm watching. Like, there's going to be now virtuous about that scene. Like, God damn it, man. Unbelievable. I didn't watch Road 2, but I did watch Being the Elite. That's how powerful this match is. Because one little tease of gear stuff on Twitter sent me racing to hear about this Hangman Page tidbit. Yeah, of course, I just share all that enthusiasm massively. So it just... it inspires you to think of great spots. Funnily enough, you mentioned the two of them coming together. I know you've sort of like had that one in your mind for years. I've always imagined they would save that for the singles match. I would like to see it teased here. And then a Young Buck and a Dark Order member dart in the way of the bullets for their respective friends slash leaders and get sandwiched in the middle of the V-Trigger and the Buckshot Lariat, something like that. And maybe, you know, you get two pinfalls out of it because they're both knocked senseless by these two finishers that they've ran in the way of speeding cars, basically. I want Hangman Page to be finally ready to Buckshot Lariat Kenny and then have a Young Buck pull his leg from the outside and try and stop it happen, only for him to kick it away and then go for it and it be down to, say, 2-on-1 and Evil Uno be the other guy to be the one to get the fall on Kenny and Evil Uno and Hangman Page be the survivors and Evil Uno to get that title shot down the road or get that, you know, redemption against Kenny. Because Hangman Page isn't just about winning for him or for his team. He doesn't even need to be about winning. It's about everything. It's about the friendship. It's about the support that he's been given and that gratification of at least contacting Kenny once and showing Kenny that that finisher can put him down for three, even if it's not him getting the cover. It's joyous to even think about. And what's great about this is always the case with AEW. They'll give you a situation that allows you to fantasy book 25 things. And then it's the 26th one that you didn't think about that's the best of the bunch. And that's what I will give them credit for that. In all their big matches, it's always the case that they come up with that one thing that absolutely nobody anywhere on podcasts, on Twitter, on Reddit, anywhere has come up with. And it's that spot. It's going to be that spot that we're doing cartwheels over tomorrow morning. And I can't wait for whatever that is. I did suggest in our like pre-podcast chat, I would love them to nick from NXT, who I think nicked from a Ric Flair, Barry Windham match. If this goes on first, the idea that this goes so long and ranging that they have to postpone half the card, it plays to the real sports field. NXT did it with Joe and Sami Zayn. It's out three falls that went 55 minutes. And it was like, oh, we haven't got time for any more wrestling. See you next week, fans. But it was really cool. WCW had done it as well, Ric Flair and Barry Windham, I think. And yeah, I'd love, like, so much of this card looks expendable this week. The Jurassic Express Hardy Family match, you could postpone Ricky Stark's championship celebration for just a couple of things. There's loads we're going to preview. And this idea that there's no time for it, they can film it in front of that crowd so the live crowd get what it wants. It's like, we're going to have to show you it on next week's Dynamite. Or we're going to, a creative thing that is, of course, by design, because they always knew this match was going to go long. It's probably not going to go that way, if I'm honest. The more thought I've given it because of ticket buying punters ultimately wanting to get what they've paid to see on a live Dynamite. But I wouldn't be against it because it would only make the match feel more prestigious. It's a WrestleMania main event on a two-hour free-to-air television show. These are the best of times. And it's all, as we said when this was set up, it only exists to sell a pay-per-view main event. That's what's so incredible about this, is that it isn't even trying to pretend that it's the end of the story. What pissed so many people off about Blood and Guts is that you were sold a conclusion. And then it was like, not only did it not feel like a conclusion on the night, it wasn't one next week. This isn't even being sold as that. This is to tease something else up. That's what's so inspired about this.
One more thing before we move on, and I will be quick because I know we've got a lot of ground to cover. I want, given that they've had more possibly of a personal rivalry than Omega and Paige, I want an eliminated Matt Jackson to threaten to screw Hangman Page, fail, because they've done so much work in establishing this little sub-rivalry. It's almost at the heart of the Elite Discord, is Matt Jackson versus Hangman Page. What a freebie to do on telly at some point before All Out, and what a match. And they've got so much storyline behind it. You could do a Road 2 dedicated entirely to that. That's what I want to see, as well as the other million things that I'm worried I won't.
Yeah, it is very much, and I know Hamlet isn't going to be going to bed, but it is like a child before Christmas. I'm going to be struggling to get to sleep and probably succumbing to doing exactly what Hamlet's going to be doing. And I've no doubt Michael Sidgwick may be tempted to do as well in terms of staying up late at night to watch this.
I will get out of sleep some of Mark.
Let's talk about the mutilated elephant in the room, Michael Hamlet. Can Chris Jericho survive Nick Gage? It's Labour number 2, no DQ, the painmaker version of Chris Jericho against MDK, Nick Gage.
I mean, he's going to have to, but massive, massive credit to AEW for answering the first issue that we raised last week about the Labours. It hit the first attempt. Of course, it's going to beat Sean Stasiak. If anything, that's kind of already ruined the first Labour. But then they've got to have these graduate in danger. Oh, no, they've like thrown the baby out with the bathwater and brought in Nick Gage to kill him. Instead, there is going to be no more Labours. He's going to kill him.
Hamlet, do you know what you said there? Was it a joke or not?
What's that? No, it was...
he didn't realise.
Stasiak instead of Sean Spears.
Sorry, yeah. That gets to the meat of the problem with Sean Spears.
He was good last week. Don't be in there.
No, he was good last week. He was good, but let's not patronise him. This is going to be great. It's awesome that we said this last year with Eddie Kingston, and in what may prove to be a more relevant example, I don't want to like piss on anyone's chips, Warhorse, that AEW is a land of opportunity. So this could go either way for Nick Gage, I think, tonight. It could be a Kingston or a Warhorse night for him. It could be the start of something incredibly special while Nick Gage finds himself hot in his own promotion, thanks to the feud with Matt Cardona. This could be a perfect storm, and he could find himself getting a much longer-term deal. The feud with MJF off the back of this feels a tap-in, if they want to do it. MJF having to run scared from Nick Gage and use the Pinnacle to protect him from this mercenary that he's bought in seems to write itself, so that'd be great. Similarly, Nick Gage is not going to be for everybody, and you have to trust Chris Jericho as a mega experienced polymath to know that and to exploit what Nick Gage brings. I don't think AEW are afraid of death matches, so they're not afraid of giving Nick Gage the toys and the bells and whistles he needs to make this great. But there's been plenty of it with your regulars. There's been plenty of it with John Moxley, with other members of the Pinnacle, you know, with a match like Blood and Guts. So they're going to have to go that little bit further. We might get pizza cutter stuff. There might be a encouragement to throw a few things in the ring because AEW has switched onto the discourse. I don't know. It's going to be wild, and I like that. I was excited for Warhorse to get his opportunity, even if on the night it didn't work. This is all a very earned and earnest thing. I expect Chris Jericho to win, but I'm very keen to see how Nick Gage gets on with such an amazing platform.
Wilborn, you watched the Road 2, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Were you like me in thinking, Christ, we're going to see some glass?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone could say, I'm sorry, Nick, we're not going to. I mean, look at the bit where they tried to slightly interview him. One final question, Nick, Mr. Cage. Shut up! Get camera here! I'll tell you what I'm going to do to Chris Jericho. That's what he did. That's what he sounded like, basically, if he was a Yorkshireman. Rumours, or speculation, I should say, Sige, got one of the questions on the news this morning about Matt Cardona potentially getting involved in this match. Do you see that? And just how bloody a war is this going to be?
I can't see Cardona getting involved. I think it's one wrinkle too many on a show that's looking like just totally and utterly stacked. There's going to be glass in this match, I think. It's the way in which they're going to build to the spot that is going to separate it from a legit GCW death match to AEW presents one on cable television. The Road 2 did not shy away from the fact that Nick Gage uses a lot of glass in his matches, panes, light tubes, etc. I don't think this is going to be on the level of Nick Gage versus Matt Cardona, which to a certain subsection of fans, not enough to make a real difference, I don't think. It might feel like a diminished return if it's not worked masterfully enough, because like Matt Cardona worked a deathmatch. Like he worked a deathmatch. He was
back. I'm not a deathmatch guy. That was great. Like they played that so well though.
His face was tremendous throughout. Mm. Like he's squealing, his little dainty attempts to do the, they're not going to do that level of violence. Even though we've seen enough of it on TNT, I just don't think we're going to get that much class. I just don't. The GCW crowd aren't going to mind getting that stuff in the eyes that people genuinely goggle up on some shows to avoid. Like there are all sorts of protocols and arena management types who probably won't sanction something like that. So I'm thinking it's going, you're definitely going to see a pizza cutter, right? He got it out last week. There's going to be blood. There's loads of blood. TNT don't mind about blood. But in terms of the glass, like I think the best way to do a death match, that's not called a death match, but you're going to get a death match to a degree that isn't called a death match because they advertised last week's Archer Moxley match as a death match. It's a death match by any other name. The use of glass, which we are going to get, it will, one, I know you said, will he survive? Of course he will. So I'm not answering the question. They should build the match around doing the glass. Like, introduce it, like swing underneath it, maybe even sprawl to the entrance ramp so you're away from those fans and do glass stuff, like by the commentary table. It's only Jim Ross. Like, he'll complain about flips more than he'll complain about getting a bit of glass, so it's fine. Build the match around the glass. So if you're going to use something that is like an instant bloodletter, like do it at the finish. I think that's the most TV-friendly means of approaching a Nick Gage match. And Chris Jericho so goddamn over. Look at last week. It was insane that he can get a death match that doesn't feel like a death match, but more of a brawl until the very end. He can get that over. I suspect that's how it'll play out. Nick Gage is really good at brawling, not magnificent at it. Like, he's all a charisma performer, and that might itself be an issue if he doesn't have that insane crowd connection. He made one of the best entrances I've ever seen at the GCW show at the weekend, and he didn't even make an entrance because he couldn't make it past the first, like, mosh pit. Without that insane reaction, who knows how much this will get over, but I'm thinking this is going to be iconic on an iconic show.
Yeah, it's going to be wild. Don't look away. You still can't really look sort of an encounter. I think you're right in terms of the way they're going to present it. And that might be quite good as well, because I know some AEW fans need to touch some glass. But also...
tremendous.
Would you have MJF on commentary? I just feel like this...
Yes, he is on commentary.
Brilliant, because
there's be an absolute open goal sitter missed because he was class last week.
Well, it's... Yeah. It's you just talk about, like, we, you know, in these sort of matches, no DQ matches, you know, people will go to weapons and go to things that they know, hence why Nick Gage goes to the light tubes and Chris Jericho, of course, goes for the pizza cutter. It's what you know, you work with what you know, basically. I'm just giving him, I'm giving him some free hits here, my good friend Maxwell. Sidge, I mean, goodness me, we go from the elimination 5-on-5 to a no DQ, or like you say, death match in every other name, to one of the most highly anticipated tag matches of the year in Santana and Ortiz versus FTR. How do you see this one playing out?
I don't know. And it's so well built. They've done the odd segment that felt extraneous. The whole idea is they really want to get this over and they really think they've got an absolute minor classic on their hands. I think either this or the 10-man starts with both teams in the ring. Like, just both matches on a stacked show, like, deserve a decent amount of time. There's enough story there. There's enough talent there. And goddamn, the range on this show is unbelievable. You're getting a death match, a 10-man tag that's got all the wonderful stylistic flourishes of this modern hybrid style, if you like. And then you've got a proper Southern-style tag team match, which I think we're going to get. I think it'll be great. I absolutely don't know who goes over. FTR are from North Carolina. We are, and I know you don't do everything around regions, but it makes kind of sense for them to go over. Santana and Ortiz can look inwardly and think, you know what? Like, we might need to break away from the Inner Circle after all this and just go on our own with Conan. And that's, and if they do that with Conan, removed from the Inner Circle, they'll almost feel like, if not new, then a new look of paint. It's sort of a new presentation that will clue the fans in on they're a bit different and we're going to push them differently, and you are to receive them as a bit more serious, having had a repackage or a soft reboot of sorts. So for all of those reasons, but then again, the books are the champions. It's all very interesting. Ultimately, this has been built so well, I don't really care who goes over. I'm just kind of into the story, into the prospect of the match. I'm all over the place with this, so I apologize. How often can Santana and Ortiz lose? They're not old at all, but this is early in their babyface run, and their heel one kind of ground to a halt almost in terms of where they were from the first full gear. I'm fascinated and excited.
I think there's a brilliant story to tell in the breakaway of Proud and Powerful from the Inner Circle as heels, perhaps. I know they're baby faces right now because the Inner Circle have turned face. But I think this defeat would only inform that too. Chris Jericho is busy with his own stuff, you know, and they could call upon that. Oh, you had your five matches and all of a sudden the Inner Circle weren't a concern because you had 5 weeks of doing your own. Sammy Guevara is this hometown hero that was just getting to bask in his own sort of reflected glory as a result of, like, getting the big moments at Blood and Guts and at Stadium Stampede. Even Jake Hager, the teasing stuff on Dark and Dark Elevation about the eventual friendship of Hager and Wardlow after, you know, they were kind of like positioned as natural rivals for all this time. They've got the most motivation to feel a little bit resentful at the fundamental failings of the Inner Circle for them. It's like, all right, so it worked out great for everybody else. It didn't really work out for us, did it? We wasted 2 years in AEW thinking the stable was going to propel us to the top, and it didn't get us there. I would like FTR to win this particular match as well, because I just think they must be buzzing to work this type of match in front of a crowd as much as we were, just to have crowds back to watch. Their style has missed live audiences so much. I think that's, I don't want to like just take the responsibility away from the wrestlers, but I think that's been to blame for what people perceive as the mixed form of FTR in AEW, is that crowds are such an integral part of their act and what makes their act tick. The cutoffs, the luxurious, amazing cutoffs of FTR, the impact of those were halved by the empty arenas or the half-filled arenas or the fans at a distance or, you know, whatever. So rarely did you feel that nervous energy that you would get in a revival classic. And I think that's going to return with a vengeance here, and we're going to feel it all. And FTR are going to be restored as probably, well, this is the thing. They might not be restored as the best in the industry, but they're back in the conversation alongside the Young Bucks. And then you can have that conversation again. And then you can build towards that match again, and so on and so on and so on. Even if it's not now, because they're both heels. So I would like an FTR win for those reasons, because I just think this match is going to be primed for them to show off. And I love Santana and Ortiz, but I think there will be other nights for them as well. Genuinely, I do. This doesn't feel like any kind of peak for them as an act. I think that all comes when the Inner Circle finally like splits off properly.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus,
Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Right, lots more to discuss on this insane card for Fight for the Fallen. Hanfler, let's talk about the IWGP US Championship match. It is going to be Lance Archer defending it after, of course, he won it from John Moxley in last week's main event against Hikuleo. I've been practicing that, Michael Sidgwick. Insane to see that visual, of course, of Hikuleo towering over Lance Archer at the end of last week's show. Great build to it as well on the road to, which is well worth checking out ahead of tonight's show as well. But is Lance Archer going to retain his title tonight?
Yeah. Aren't they tall? Are they both really tall? look, I haven't seen Road 2, and I apologise for that ahead of this, but that's what I've got to go off. Aren't they tall? And I kind of wish this wasn't happening on the show. This feels to me the most superfluous addition to this card. Not that I don't want to watch it, but Lance Archer felt special again last week against John Moxley, and I've got worries that he'll feel normalised by this first defence. I hope not. I've never seen enough of Hikuleo to make me think that this like has the chance of being like a sleeper hit or a show stealer, nor have I really seen enough of Lance Archer yet to think that he's got it in him outside of this magic moment of the contest that we got last week. So yeah, like not super enthusiastic, but I dare say expectations will be quite low, so they might be able to exceed them. I don't want that to seem cruel against both guys. They'll want this to be great and they'll want this to bang, but this is one of the additions that I would consider pretty needless on this card, and I hope it's brief.
I think it will be brief, but not too brief. The idea is they have a working relationship with New Japan Pro Wrestling. I can imagine, without being privy to it, that a lot of very careful negotiation goes into the minutiae of every detail. This is going to have to go a certain amount of time or be worked in a certain way that will protect Hikuleo. He can't just get beat in 3 minutes, but then he's not that good yet that he could go 10, and especially not on this card. Why? I'm expecting a proper 5 minute sprint that Archer looks twice like he's going to lose before winning in resounding fashion, possibly with two. Could he even do the blackout on this guy? They can certainly tease it. Maybe some kind of spot where he's doing the claw to an extent is no sold, and then finally he does it. Let's have to be careful here in terms of just not overexposing this lad. He's green.
Can Hikuleo walk the ropes or do something of similar athleticism to what Lance Archer can do? Because that might be quite a fun twist on it. You're expecting bombs over 5 minutes and then they both do something like jaw-dropping from a height.
By mobile, I mean, you can do like a cannonball flip. But yeah, it looks pretty cool. But he's got like kind of this timid, very new in wrestling vibe to him, like divorced entirely from that of his dad's. So they have to be careful because his facials aren't the best. He's still very green. But, you know, fundamentally, you know where he's trained. It's almost a guarantee of a base level of quality. And he can get about a bit, which is a spectacle, looks great because look at the size of him. Bombs for 5 minutes, like just trade bombs for 5 minutes. Do Goldberg, Lesnar, if you can. I don't think you can, but try, because that's the ceiling of this match.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what you need to just fire out of the blocks and get this over and done with relatively swiftly. But I agree. I think Lance Archer retention is on the cards. Sidge, on a show with so much already on it, is tonight the night that Christian Cage turns on Jungle Boy? He's teaming with him and Luchasaurus against the Hardy Family Office, being represented by Angelico, Mark Quinn and Isaiah Cassidy. Is it tonight?
It's going to be a momentous show. Possibly. You might get the first explicit hint towards it, or a very, very strong tease that starts a conversation that I haven't really seen started, to be honest, yet. I think this will set up Jungle Boy versus Matt Hardy, which will set up in some way Christian Cage versus Jungle Boy, in the way I have this in my head, by the way. I'm not privy to the booking plans. I just think this is the way to tell the story and the best use of Christian going forward. Again, do I need this match? Not really, but I might be working on a project. I might be up to All Out 2019 on said project. I might have rewatched SCU versus Jurassic Express. And honestly, watching Luchasaurus in front of fans again might genuinely pop people's tits off all over again. That spot where he does the pack handspring over Kazarian and Daniels, and then Scorpio Sky's about to lariat him, and he like kips up off his back and tears down the house. It's like, oh, right, Luchasaurus is the best wrestler on the planet. Like, he's not, but in that moment, he was everything a millennial wrestling fan liked about wrestling at various stages of their life. Massive muscles, ridiculous character, and he's a super worker in 2 minute bursts. Amazing. People forget that about Luchasaurus. This might be a little big platform for him, if you like. I expect the face team to go over. I expect this to draw the ire of Matt Hardy. I expect him to try and get a Jungle Boy and get saved, maybe too slowly, by Christian Cage, because that feels like the direction for this Jungle Boy arc. Keep it short and sweet. Like, that's my takeaway on most things on this show.
Yeah, like, nothing to add. Again, it's when you want to talk all day about the big stuff, conversely, there feels so little to add to the smaller elements of this show, and it just makes you feel like, ah, you could have saved that. You could have saved it, because everything warrants a spotlight. They're telling stories, so everything warrants its time, but something's going to fall victim over this 2 hours, and you can only hope that it's one of the like lesser events, the, you know, the less essential elements of the show.
I think the three of them involved in the ring, that leaves, maybe just going to be a sadist and I try to look for every opportunity for this sort of thing. I agree. I think Cage, Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus get the win here. And Marco Stunt, it's been a while, so let's have a kidnapping. That's probably what we're going to get.
What about that?
So, yeah, I mean, he presumably would be ringside, but if he's not, I'd almost guarantee that we're going to get a big shot up on the screen of Marco Stunt being, I don't know, bundled into Hardy's van or something like that, because
and slapped about by King Maxwell at the compound.
Yeah, something like that perhaps. But yeah, I think you're right, Sid, just in particular as well, of this being the night of not the turn but more things to add to our little collection of glances or moments between Christian Cage and Jungle Boy. Also advert tonight pamphlet is an apology. QT Marshall will apologize to Tony Schiavone. What could possibly go wrong here?
Well, I've said my piece on this on several podcasts just because I'm trying to talk it into existence, basically. Mm-hmm. I want things I don't care about to turn into things I care about more than most of the things in pro wrestling. What I'm saying about that is QT Marshall tipping drinks over Tony Schiavone, not mega arsed. Britt Baker versus Serena Deeb, hottest match in the world. So, like, let it all be what I've kind of invented. And then all of this has been worthwhile and all of it has been great. If not Serena Deeb, to be fair, feels like the Britt Baker feud, doesn't it? Feels like the next Britt Baker story. Feels like a shoo-in for that. Again, we've talked a little bit about the not great first program for Britt with Nyla Rose and the awkward transition of her to being a fully-fledged babyface world champion, and how you capitalise on how amazing she was in the build to winning the title, because they've not really found that sweet spot just yet. This is it, isn't it? Nobody likes QT Marshall. Everybody adores Tony Schiavone, including Britt Baker. She adores Tony Schiavone. This is it. Serena Deeb is the best match, but there are several others that you can tee up off this. Anyone can have... Jade Cargill could be a factory trainee who's been quietly getting better under... You know, he's a wrestling trainer. He's already kept some of his trainees secret from Cody. That's how you had the factory in the first place. It's not that wild to think he's got a woman that wants to fight for him and she's going to come at Britt Baker for daring to come at him. It's got to be that, hasn't it? It's got to be the point of all this.
I hope so, because you are wasting your time with the greatest will in the world of setting up another QT Marshall program on this edition of the program. Like, I mean, he's the best player coach imaginable, because you don't want to see him on TV that much. And yet when he's on TV in a limited capacity, he's really, really good. And you know that he's way better as a behind-the-scenes guy. I really hope this fantasy booking happens, Hamflet. And I'm starting to think it might certain social media accounts are really retweeting Serena Deeb content, maybe with a little bit of a push to say, right, okay, she's coming in for a program, so get her over. And not that you need any kind of cynicism to do that, because she's one of the easiest wrestlers on this planet to talk about and put over. And as a result, she should be more heavily featured on this program. Let's hope it starts tonight.
It's logical as well, because the whole deal is that she was a coach, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like, relegated to a coach in WWE. So it makes sense that she would be as angry as QT Marshall about her placement.
These are the wonderful things they think about as well.
Mm. It's either going to go one of two ways. The way we all want it to go, Serena Deeb, or, you know, like you say, someone else potentially being set up as a future opponent for Britt Baker, because they've isolated Tony Schiavone and they know about their relationship there. Or, to save time, QT Marshall goes, sorry, Tony. On to the next thing. Okay, here we go. We have got Thunder Rosa's first match as, I believe, or certainly first match on Dynamite as an official All Elite wrestler. She will face Julia Hart. And this could be a bit of a low-key banger, couldn't it, Sige?
No. Oh. I mean, Julia Hart's very green. Just a bit too green for Dynamite, in my opinion. And I don't want this to be a banger. I don't want this to go long enough to qualify for banger status. This is the refrain of this podcast. Like, this doesn't need to be on the show. Mm. I think it's on the show for a very nice, wholesome, benevolent reason, that being Thunder Rosa's just signed properly with AEW, and I am totally buzzed for that, incidentally. I want this to be a two-minute squash. I just do. It behooves the dynamic, the show itself. If this is nothing other than a platform for a pop, get your pop and get to the finish. Like, it's a very nice thing to do. Welcome to the team. You're here properly. Have yourself a match on Dynamite. Those 3 minutes might just be way better spent elsewhere. And look, Thunder Rosa's coming in as a former NWA Women's Champion, someone who's defeated your champion, which will inform something at some point. Julia Hart, and she's a body. She's a corpse in this match for me. And I wanted to go 2 to 3 minutes.
I wonder, you know, about Julia Hart being the chosen opponent here, because she is such a white meat babyface, so young, so green, aligned with other babyfaces on television. Is this the start of a very slow burn and potentially awesome Thunder Rosa heel turn, where she says what a lot of us said at the time? Hang on, in that big match that everybody loved, I fucking won, and I left you a bloody mess, and then these people cheer you, and you go on to win the title. And is this the beginning of that, when she absolutely crushes, like, the kindest soul in the women's division? She just brutalizes her, and it begins the start of, you see, the, like, because Thunder Rosa's been, I don't want to say like a happy, smiley baby face, but she's such an effervescent figure. And then the work's so great that, like, even in the small quarters of Daily's place, she's become beloved pretty quickly. Like, they could start tweaking that as she resents the ascent of Britt Baker following their classic match, and she becomes Britt's opponent in, you know, three wrestlers' time, whatever. This begins her rather aggressive rise up the rankings.
I'll take that.
We also have a championship celebration that was teased on last week's show. Ricky Stark celebrating his newly won FTW championship from Brian Cage. Brian Cage loves a celebration. He's blatantly going to show up for this. Hamlet, how do you see it playing out?
I don't know. I don't think this is going to be bad, but I don't think it's going to be that great that it warrants a lot of time. This really is a familiar refrain, isn't it? Like,
Somehow, you want a 35-minute elite action. That's all
it is. That's all it is. I just, they do a better job of these. You know, we joke about the Chris Jericho synonym generator for when they're having to do an inner circle segment. They tend to do a better job with these more often than not. And obviously Cage coming in and wrecking stuff and, like, have something big. A massive stone statue or something. Something big that Brian Cage can throw that another person couldn't throw normally. You know, like, he's ginormous. It can't just be a cake. Anyone can mess up a cake. Like, it's got to be something really physically heavy. Taz, let him throw Taz. but just like, yeah, probably just that, because there doesn't seem the time or place for further storyline development. The idea is now Cage is going to have to run the gauntlet of Team Taz to try and get his hands on Taz, to try and get his hands on Hook. I don't know, to regain the FTW. I don't really know, but he's going to want to fight them. He's going to want some revenge. I can't see, like, my angle alert klaxon isn't blaring here. It's Cage breaking it up and team ties, but you know, we'll get you, and then a series of matches. I don't know. I'm just not feeling Cage having a trick up his sleeve. I don't know.
They need to babyface Brian Cage yesterday, considering they didn't do it 2 weeks ago or 1 week ago. Two or whatever. On socials, Ricky Starks has promised a New Orleans-sized celebration. Right? If you're going to do that, here's my idea. Get every small, bony, wimpy, independent guy you can find in the area. Put them all in Mardi Gras get-up. Have them second Team Taz to the ring. Have Brian Cage powerbomb, drill claw, kill each and every one of them as Team Taz scarpers up the ramp or through the crowd. And he stands tall with a just field of broken bodies in his wake. You get Brian Cage doing awesome Brian Cage stuff multiplied. You get pissed off Taz with his wonderful, aggressive, just default, ornery face, having had the celebration spoiled. Have Ricky Starks with his wonderful animated face, like furious at what he's done to the celebration. Hook and Hobbs, mean mugging throughout. Get it over and done with in 4 or 5 minutes. But like, I generally think with the color and the spectacle associated with the New Orleans celebration and all of that exploding across your screen as Brian Cage throws them across it, That's the plan. That's the play, surely.
Just as raging in some orange and black beads that Brian Cage has ruined. Yes. Or something like that. Like, he ruined my beignet!
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of, we all know what's going to happen. And yeah, Hamflo, like we said, I think it's going to be, for some reason, I've got this in my head for a week now. It's going to be statue related because of the, you know, the infamous Ricky Starks, because he's an absolute beast, his pose. So maybe you have, you know, I'm not trying to say, oh, let's do brilliant callbacks to the Seth Rollins and Sting build. But yeah, they've got a sculpture that they've got made of Ricky Starks. But even from the outline, you can tell, because look at the size difference, regardless of how big you make the statue in Ricky Starks and Brian Cage, and just pulling that off and it just being Brian Cage there or something. But yes, I think a combination of the two with, like you say, Sige, the Team Taz mean mugging fury at the top of the ramp when this supposed celebration gets ruined, or have it go 3 minutes and no Brian Cage and it goes great and we can move on to the next thing as well. Just keep it rolling. I'm sorry, Tony. Oh, congratulations. Hey, okay. So going to be such a manic show. And I haven't apologized in advance ahead of tomorrow's podcast because I feel like it's almost guaranteed I'm going to forget to mention maybe an entire segment on tomorrow's review because of my notes will be all over the sodding shop and just so much to cover and pops to mention. Finally, Sige, we have a major new live event announcement from one Tony Khan. He slightly screwed up his timings there because my birthday is not in 9 days. It's in 11. But if it's not that, maybe, I don't know why it wouldn't be that. If it's not that, what do you think it will be, Sige?
I mean, Christ. I don't want to talk about this, but Delta's appearing over the last 6 days to be flaming out over here. Maybe the same thing will happen over there, even though maybe it's on getting vaccinated. So who knows? It feels like there's just a huge uncertain asterisk next to everything. So they could say, look, we've got some data. That means we're going to sell out that massive stadium WWE did for WrestleMania 32. Like biggest AEW show ever, like 100,000 fans. And, you know, we're going to sell it out, so that's why we're doing it. And I'd still be like, I'm still scared of everything. I don't know what it is. It's going to have to be bigger than Arthur Ashe. If they're dedicating, it'll be 20 seconds. 20 seconds of pre-taped, 20 to 40 seconds of the announcement. But it has to be bigger than Arthur Ashe, otherwise why say it's big enough to be revealed exclusively on TV? Imagine if this went to MSG. That would be the banter response. Go to MSG, sell it out quicker than WWE. With this company this hot, that's what I would personally do. I don't think it's going to be that, but that's what I would do. I'd love cock on the table.
I think he's going to announce that he's selling tickets to CM Punk the movie. That's going to be the confirmation that the big man's finally coming in. Up until a week ago, when this announcement didn't feel quite as cursed as it does today, as AEW were literally apparently discussing the future of their pre-existing dates, I was thinking UK tour, you know, the big show down the cottage. There's like so much that they can do with these big sort of stadiums, as Cedric alluded to, a WrestleMania-sized venue. Any kind of international tour, because AEW haven't done it in countries that are safe to travel to, if any are. I don't know, it's a tough time to be announcing live events, isn't it? It's a really tough time. Arthur Ashe is so impressive on the surface that even if you announce a place that Scott's, say, I don't know, 40,000 in, does it matter right now? Because people are just super, super jazzed for a smaller venue that's going to look class, that is in Vince McMahon's backyard, that is almost promising something huge by its very nature. He's got something, otherwise they wouldn't have promoted it in this way. He doesn't normally get name-checked in this regard. I don't think this is going to be insignificant, I'll say that much. But the fact that they've mentioned it to do with live events and the like, I don't know, like it makes it particularly tricky to get your hopes up for something. It's American, man. They can promise out, I guess. We're looking at this from our side of the pond, and maybe they'll just see it differently over there. Maybe it's because it's their stadium. They want to sell that stadium. They want to sell, advertise something for 2022 in the Jacksonville Jaguars stadium. Mm. You know, a long, long time from now. Double or nothing 2020. It was a double or nothing that they announced the locations for All In and Full Gear. So it's not that wild to think that they could announce a revolution or a double or nothing for 2022 in a giant building. So maybe it's just something like that. Like, it's going to be big, but please can wait and go and get vaccinated so you can come.
Yeah, I'm very much mixed emotions, like you say, with that news coming out today of them going, oh, bollocks, it's happening. I'm just, so long as it's not, we're going to Saudi Arabia, or hey, we're doing homecoming next week. Speaking of homecoming, how about we all go back to Daly's Place for a few more months?
A 6-month residence in Daly's. Good news, guys.
Yes, as long as it's not anything like that, I'll be happy. But yeah, feel free to speculate and let us know your thoughts on what the announcement is going to be and what on earth is going to go down tonight on this, as I keep saying, bonkers show with so much to look forward to. Make sure you check out The Road 2 as well, because it's just production values are just sensational on that. And you don't need to get any more jazzed about tonight, but it certainly will help. Like I said, I haven't even got time to mention the Dark Order versus the Elites. Wild, wild stuff going on. But let us know your thoughts ahead of tonight's show on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett, who will no doubt be live tweeting throughout tonight's show at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow Michael Cedric, who, like me, is going to be sensible and be tweeting about it probably about 7:30 tomorrow morning at
M. Sidgwick.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at What Culture WWE, as I said, though. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. Our review of NXT from earlier on today is available right now. And if you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, you'll be notified as soon as our review of Fight for the Fallen comes out tomorrow. But this has been the preview for AEW Dynamite. Enjoy Fight for the Fallen. My thanks to the Dadley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.